is on the radio today. Turn it up, it's time to get on with the show. On 98.7 ESPN Radio.
This is Robin Roberts, and the Michael K. Show starts right now. Take it away, Michael, Don, and Peter.
Well, thank you, Robin, and a good afternoon, everybody. This is indeed the Michael K. Show. We thank you for joining us on this Tuesday, April 12th, 2022. Michael K., Don LaGreca, Peter Rosenberg. We're apart, but we're together for the next 3.5 hours.
Sure.
That's right.
The other 20, that is your responsibility. Before we start off, and, you know, this is the real world, everybody, and what's happened in Brooklyn in the subway shooting is a sobering reality of the life in the world in which we live. We do not disrespect what's happening, but we will try to take your mind off of it a little bit. Obviously, there's an intersection between real life and sports today, because what happened in that Brooklyn subway station was about two subway stops away from the Nets practice facility and fairly close to the Barclays Center, where there's going to be a play-in game tonight, as of this point, between the Cavaliers and the Nets. But so far, the word we're hearing is that people have been injured, but we have not heard of any fatality yet. Of more concern is that the shooter has not been found. He got out of there, and we don't. The policemen and the detectives of New York City are looking for him, but as of this point, he is still on the loose. But just awful, awful, awful. And again, we're not disrespecting what happened in Brooklyn, but we are here to talk about something that might take your mind off of it, but we do note it, and it's just awful.
One bit of, and you just mentioned it, but one positive thing to go with, because it was really scary. We were on the air this morning, and when it started happening, and it certainly, especially with the trauma that this city's been through, you start having fears of, oh my God, is this a bigger event? So really scary stuff. So to see right now that it's being described as non-life-threatening injuries is one silver lining that we can at least hang our hat on.
Scary times. Scary times. And the mayor has come out and said, I'm not going to allow New Yorkers to be terrorized. And, you know, obviously the subway system is so important to the life of this city and the heartbeat of this city. So people can't be afraid to use the subway. But it's just a scary moment this morning. And if we don't lose a life because of this, we should all thank whoever we thank for the fortune of that. But we'll keep an eye on this, and I'm sure the NBA is keeping an eye on it as well, because there's an active shooter that's loose in that area, and as of this point, it seems as if they are going to play tonight's game. So we'll talk more about that game at 4 o'clock with Frank Isola, obviously on the court. The Nets, you know, Kevin Durant said it's devastating, and You know, they were practicing today, and they were looking up at the televisions at live reports of what was happening. So that was happening during their walkthrough. So it's certainly a dose of reality thrown into the face of those that are, you know, using fun and games to make their living. But it affects everybody. It really does. So we apologize. Believe me, there's no intent of ours to seem insensitive. You know, you could do 4 hours on this, but that's, you know, if you want to have more information on this, you should go to another station and listen to a news.
Yeah, there are people better equipped. There are people better equipped to deal with this. And by the way, fortunately, if you are looking for a distraction, Michael, I feel like there are a few topics come out of last night's baseball games that people will be quite passionate about.
Yep, and why don't we start there? It's a good, you know, a very good idea by you, Peter. It really
Thank
is.
You. Thank you. I pay enough attention these days to know. There's some things going on.
And it's a great day in sports. I mean, both the Mets and Yankees taking on rivals. You've got the Nets in a play-in with the Cleveland Cavaliers. You've got the Rangers battling for first place with Carolina. Tonight, just 2 points separating first place Carolina and second place New York. So lots to dive into over the next 3.5 hours.
Now, one thing that we'd like to do, because we like to set records on the show, and we actually weren't on the air, but at 2:45 – Aaron Boone posted the Yankee lineup for tonight's game against the Blue Jays.
Something's going on.
Wow.
You know, the only thing that I could think is going on is that, you know, all sports are now in bed with the gambling sites. And it's hard to gamble on a game if you don't know what your lineup is. Or what team you're betting on. Well, who's playing? Well, anyway, here's tonight's Yankee starting lineup brought to you by Bigelow Tea. And please, guys, if I forget on Thursday at 4 o'clock when we talk to Aaron Boone, we talk to him every Thursday. Remind me because I want to ask.
Yeah.
This is 4 hours before you usually post your lineup, so what's going on here?
It is funny.
Remember last year we would wait? We'd actually have it during ENN sometimes. So anyway, here's today's Yankees starting lineup against the Blue Jays. Josh Donaldson gets a start at third base. He'll lead off. Batting second, playing center field, Aaron Judge. The DH today is Anthony Rizzo. He's going to hit third. Cleaning up the right field is Giancarlo Stanton. The first baseman today is DJ LeMahieu. He'll bat fifth. Batting sixth, playing second base, Gleyber Torres. Aaron Hicks is in left field, and he's going to bat seventh. Batting eighth and playing catcher, Kyle Higashioka. And the shortstop is Isaiah Kinafalefa, and he is going to bat ninth. Starting for the Yankees is going to be Nestor Cortez, who had such a good year for the Yanks last year. And Yusei Kikuchi is going to start for the Toronto Blue Jays. So I think this is going to be a betting thing, too. Who's the odd man out of the nine? Well, today it's Joey Gallo, who actually had a good game yesterday. He actually had two hits and a walk, and he's the one who gets the seat today. So there's
any,
a method
any
to
logic?
The madness.
Is there any logic to that? You think?
I don't see the logic.
There's no logic. The logic is
time to rest.
It's time to rest. They do not. I don't know what the number is. We can ask Aaron on Thursday, but there's probably we only want our everyday players to play X amount of games. So that means we've got to give them rest. Now I don't know why you have to give rest immediately after a good game. The night before, but Peter, if you're going to give a guy 20 games off during a 162 game schedule, then there's going to be times where this is going to happen. If you're going to guarantee that LeMahieu is going to get 500 at bats, then that means there's going to be guys that are not going to play. And Michael brought it up being a talking point when you're telling starters, oh, by the way, you're not going to play today, but also just a confusion or just what the madness is behind when guys sit and when they don't.
The only thing I could think of, I mean, it's the obvious one. You know, Kikuchi's left-handed and Gallo's left-handed, but Gallo doesn't seem like he's that much difference between lefties and righties, but that would be the reason because Hicks is the switch hitter. That's today's Yankees starting lineup. Brought to you by Bigelow Tea. Bigelow Tea is a proud supporter of the Michael K. Show and the official hot tea of Joe Torre and the New York Yankees. All right, so now we're going to go take a broader look at the Yankees and the Mets from last night, leading us into Diamond Notes, brought to you by Nissan. Dom, why don't you start with the Mets? They lose their second game out of the bullpen. I mean, they could actually be and should be 5-0. The bullpen blew the game on Sunday. The bullpen blew a 4-0 lead in the eighth inning yesterday.
Yeah,
now,
that's...
obviously, Edwin Diaz not being there because he had to go back to Puerto Rico for his grandfather's funeral. I understand that completely. But they have missed him, Don. And you can see people were pitching innings that they normally didn't pitch. And you extend Trevor May to a second inning, which he didn't do last year, and then he ended up hurting, you know, his arm was hurt. And that's on top of the fact that Taijuan Walker had two strong innings, but then his shoulder tightened up, and he had to leave. They were picked up by David Peterson pitching so well. But you hold your breath because seems like a couple of guys are going to make that trip to the MRI tube.
Yeah, and that's the more disturbing thing than the loss. But to your original point, yeah, back-to-back losses in which they had a lead in the eighth inning. Now, the Washington game was only a one-run lead, but this was 4-0, Michael.
Right.
And you give up five runs in one inning, and Lugo just couldn't get anybody out. And you were hoping, all right, they tied the game up at four, but, you know, just survive, and Gregorius gets the hit to take the lead, and then that was it. And they could not touch hand in the ninth inning. He was spectacular, and he was facing two out of three lefties. He was able to get McCann, the only righty. And that was it. 1-2-3. Mets down went quietly in the ninth inning. But you can't afford to have Walker hurt. You know, May hasn't been great this year. But still, it's a body in the bullpen that was kind of questionable going into the season. But I don't blame last night's loss on Walker having to leave after two.
No, Peterson.
You got to get outs in the eighth and ninth inning, Michael, regardless. I mean, Walker was not going to pitch a complete game. Peterson was great, came in. But guys like May and Rodriguez and Lugo are guys you're going to need in situations like that. You know, guys, you're going to have to go into games, Michael, I'm assuming, unless DeGrom's healthy, Scherzer, that you're going to, with Scherzer and DeGrom, you're going to have to probably get nine outs, and with the other guys, you're going to have to get 12. You're going to have to prepare for that. So you're going to have to go 3-4 deep into your bullpen a lot of nights, and that means guys are going to have to pitch well. May's been not great. You know, Williams was beaten on Sunday because of the bad defense, but that was all bullpen last night. And Lugo had a chance to get out of it after the home run and just couldn't do it.
Now, you worry about, is Walker okay? Because you've already lost DeGrom for 2 months, and Walker tweeted out that everything's fine. We have not heard from the Mets yet, so we'll assume that Walker had tests done, and he said that everything is, in fact, fine. You know, they were worried about his knee in spring training, but now it was his shoulder that acted up. Remember, he was an all-star last year, and then the second half he was dreadful.
Yeah.
But, you know, he pitched two strong innings, but then the shoulder tightened up. But, you have depth, but when you get to depth, then there's no more depth. So you've already enlisted Tyler McGill, and he pitched so well on opening day to replace DeGrom. Well, I guess Peterson would slide in if Walker had to miss a start or two. But then after that, Don, then, you know, you're really reaching.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Yeah, you just don't want to get into that. And I was talking about it before the show, where you understand teams like the Blue Jays, you build and try to score runs. Because, you know, can you rely on pitching anymore, Michael? I mean, these guys are going to get hurt. You're going to have bullpen games. You're going to have openers. You got to score runs. And the Mets have scored runs for the most part. But, you know, in that ballpark, even though it was the eighth inning, Michael, they scored 3 runs in the first inning, scored one more run the rest of the way. So I don't want to blame the offense, Michael. This was clearly the bullpen melting down in the eighth inning. You don't expect to give up 5 runs. But it's Citizens Bank. You got a 3-0 lead before the Phillies even bat, and you only score one more run the rest of the way?
Now, one quick aside about the game. Alec Baum had an awful game at third base.
Oh, my God.
For those older Yankee, or about my age, Rich McKinney once made 4 errors for the Yankees at third base. Well, Alec Baum made 3. And cameras are everywhere now. And the fans are, you know, he made a couple of errors and then made a routine play and made it successfully. And the crowd in Philly,
right,
you know, they cheered sarcastically. And he's walking off the field. And he says to one of his teammates, "I hate this bleeping place." Clearly, you could read his lips that he said that. Now, when I become a college professor and I'm teaching public relations and how to deal with the media, this would be the way I would do it. At the end of the game, you know what Alec Baum did? He didn't deny it. He said, "It's the heat of the moment. It was a stupid thing to say. These fans just want to win. I want to apologize to them. I don't hate it here at all." Now, he might hate it here, but instead of sitting there and lying, you misread my lip. I didn't say that.
No, no, how about the narrative that's being spun is, instead of using the word narrative, just owning it.
Right, own it. And you know what? He did, and I think the fans will appreciate that. Rather than the nonsense, that's like what Ronald Acuna Jr., you know, they misrepresented what I said. No, you said it. Now own it and say I'm sorry. And that's what exactly Alec Baum did.
Well, the problem is you couldn't blame the media.
No, because now,
usually they blame the media, but the media didn't have a chance. Everybody saw that he said it. Now, if this had come out afterward, he would have said, "Oh, the media's blown out of proportion." But he got caught. He owned up to it. I get it. Like, sometimes it's one of those things like, I want to kill you, and you know you don't want to really kill the person. He just committed 3 errors in one inning. I mean, I understand the frustration. He's getting booed. You have to understand, especially in Philly, you're going to get booed, especially when you deserve to get booed. I mean, that the only one I could think of that made 3 errors, you were talking about 4, was the for in my era, Michael, because I'm a little bit younger than you, was the Tommy John play.
Right.
Right, when he had 3 errors on the one play. But that's going to happen. But no, he owned up to it. That's good. But, boy, they talked about all offseason how bad this Philadelphia defense. It's as advertised. It's bad. I don't know how they are going to be able to compete in this division playing defense this bad.
Well, I mean, if you play the Mets, at least you can always come just win the game in the eighth inning. So you have that. And by the way, I bleeping hate this place. That's like, they're a couple, the most loving couple on planet Earth. can be in a fight and the partners can say under their breath, I can't stand you. Like, that's not... I think it's easy to forgive someone in a moment where everyone's attacking them for saying that.
Now, I will tell you one thing. I understand what the game is right now. I mean, we've all come to grips with it, right? But what the game has become is so ultra dependent on at least three relievers all being sharp at the same time. It's amazing. I don't understand. I get all the statistics, say, third time through the order. Starters that are not top-flight starters, they have a decided drop-off in efficacy. Okay, I get it. But you're not training them to go any longer. You're not training them to throw 120 pitches. You're not training them to go to the seventh or eighth inning. They're looking over at the bullpen in the fifth inning and the sixth inning because that's the way they were brought up. And now you're putting so many games in the hands of the bullpen. There's got to be a market correction. It's not sustainable to win games like that all the time.
No, because it's every day. The game's every day.
Right.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If it was just once a week, you could do it.
If you had the schedule that the NBA and the NHL has, where out of nowhere you can get 3 days off, yeah, you can play the game that way. Or if it's football, where it's once a week, but you're playing every day. And baseball, more than any other sport, every game is connected. What you do the day before is going to affect you the next day, and no better example is than the bullpen. So you get a guy that goes deep, you get a great pitcher, is not going to pitch three straight days. So you're going to have times where your best reliever might not be available or he'll be compromised because he had to throw too many pitches the day before that. So when you've designed, Michael, starting pitching to only have to go five, maybe six innings, where at the minimum you're going to have to get nine outs, and on most days you're going to have to get 12, and you're going to go four deep into your bullpen every single night, then the only alternative is to do what the Yankees did and have 16 pitchers. But if you do that, you're going to be light on the bench. Now, are the Yankees going to go 16 the rest of the way?
No, because they got to cut down to 26 at the beginning of May. So they'll have to cut. I think it'll be the two relievers that'll go. And you would hope that by that point, pitchers are at least stretched out to 90 pitch or 105 pitches. But I mean, what the Yankees got from Tyone yesterday, they should be thrilled. They got five innings. That's the most they got out of any starter in the first four games.
But even once these guys get stretched out, Michael.
Excuse me?
Yeah. There's no other way to say it, unfortunately. That's great for the Scherzers and the Groms of the world and the Coles of the world, but a lot of these pitchers, Michael, the managers have no appetite to have them go through the third time through the inning. So really, I mean, as great as McGill could be, as great as Carrasco can be, how really, unless they're really on, Michael, how often are they going to be allowed to pitch six, seven innings?
Pretty infrequently.
Right. So that means that after, and now because Scherzer's your number one until DeGrom comes back, you might have to go with four guys in your rotation where every day it's going to be 9 to 12 outs.
Right.
And if you do have, you know, and if one day you're lucky enough that you only use two relievers, but they go a couple of innings, well, then good luck getting the effectiveness the next day. And if they do pitch the next day and it's just one, then they won't be available for the third day. You're chasing your tail.
Now, the Yankees yesterday, they didn't lose because of the bullpen. I mean, the bullpen did a really, really good job. Marinaccio came in and did a good job again. Michael King gave up one run. The two-run home run to Springer was the difference in the game. The Yankee offense, it's not clicking for the last two games. The last two games, they're 3-for-15 with runners in scoring position, leaving 19 runners on base. Those are the last two games. That's not because of the bullpen, but again, they have used the bullpen a lot, and that's why they're carrying all those pitchers, and I really believe it's not sustainable. I really believe it is truly not sustainable, and the Yankees have a great bullpen. I mean, they've got guys up and down that bullpen that could pitch high-leverage situations. Not every team does that. I think the Yankees are built the right way for the way the baseball is played now. Their bullpen is stout. They've lost because of their offense. Every single one of the games they've fallen behind and they've had a climb out. And yesterday they just couldn't do anything. And Joey Gallo gets two hits yesterday. He doesn't start today. The Yankees are, as they've always been, either they're going to hit home runs and win or they're not. They're just not. And Alec Manoah pitched great for the Blue Jays yesterday, and then they got three strong innings out of their bullpen, and that's it. So they lost the first game to the Blue Jays. I mean, the sky is certainly not falling, but I told you this. I told you this in spring training. Don and Peter will back me up. Blue Jays are for real. They're for real.
It's not just a cute pick, people.
No. It's real.
I noticed people say that. Like, people have been saying a little bit like, oh, everyone's going with the Blue Jays. By the way, I picked the Blue Jays to win the division, too. Not that anyone cares. It's just logical. You're looking at a team that's been building this direction, Michael. This isn't just cute. This is where they are now.
And you watch the way they play the game. And not a lot of teams play like this. Watch tonight, if you so choose on yes, right? Every ground ball they run as if their hair's on fire. They're flying down the line. They're putting pressure on the defense. A lot of teams don't do that. Let me amend that. Most teams don't do that. Seems like every guy on their team runs to first base as if their life depended on it. That's what youth does. I mean, when you've got an older team, they can't do that because they might blow out a muscle. But these guys are young, they're athletic, they're energetic, and they're flying to first base on every ground ball.
You said the word, though, that every Yankee fan cringes when they hear, athletic. And this is still an athletic sport. You know, you play that station-to-station baseball sometimes, and you're relying on the home runs. This is a team that they hustle, and they're athletic. And they were just showing the clips of the infield. That's a big play with bases loaded in the third inning. That's a huge play. That changes everything. So they play well defensively. Situationally, they could hit home runs. And if they get pitching, Michael, this is every bit the team people are picking to be the best team in the American League.
All right. It looks like Trevor May has also said that he's good to go. So players are now breaking their own news rather than the team.
Right.
So he just tweeted out a thumbs up. So there you have it. So good news on May and good news on Walker.
I'd like news. Like, all right, thumbs up. That can't be news.
Right.
So thumbs up. Is he not going on the IL? Is it not as serious as people thought? Is he available tomorrow? Like, I need to know what the thumbs up means. The high fives that Walker, great. But I need to know what that means. And also, you know, remember DeGrom last year?
Right.
Oh, he's got a partial tear. No, I don't. So what are the Mets going to say?
Now, this is going to be a tale of how much power a star player has.
Okay.
All right? If you've been to Yankee games the last year and the first four games this year, when they get to two strikes, they play what sounds like a dying whale sound. But somebody told me it's something from Star Wars.
Hmm.
It's the Death Star, okay? But it sounds like a dying whale.
Right.
So Laura Albanese of Newsday reports that Gerrit Cole implied he does not overly enjoy the weird dying whale siren they play with two strikes. Let's see if it stops. Gerrit Cole does not like it. Let's see what that means. I don't think it fits either. I don't understand it. I don't get it. But somebody must like it because it's been played for a year and five games.
Why? Who makes a decision like that?
You never know.
So when Cole's pitching and he goes two strikes on someone who makes that sound?
Yeah, every Yankee that gets two strikes, every Yankee pitcher that gets the two strikes and makes a dying whale sound.
I don't even know why you have to have that. The one great thing about New York baseball, and I don't know who started it, I'll assume it's the Yankees because they've been around longer, is when you rise to your feet and start clapping
with
two outs and two strikes
and
anticipating
you know
the end of the inning.
It started in 1978 with Ron Guidry, and it's been a thing. They don't need to be artificially told what to do.
See, that's the thing. And again, Peter, don't get mad. Like when I say, I'm not saying New York's special. I'm just saying it's different.
That's what they play, Peter, for every two strokes.
That would annoy me. I'm with Garrett on that one. Yeah, it's stupid.
I got to tell you, I'm in lockstep with Garrett. That doesn't make sense.
I don't think he's being a tool. I think he's just being honest. And if he's got the power, please.
Who would want that?
And at one point over the weekend, game two, it was so loud because the crowd was big that, remember, they're getting audio signs now. And all of a sudden you saw Louis Severino put his hand over his ear because he couldn't hear the chip in his hat saying fastball up and away. So he had to, like, make a circular motion with his hand to Higashioka.
Oh, no.
Hit the sign again. I can't hear it.
No, it's gone. That's enough of a reason there. I mean, no, Severino doesn't have the power that Cole has, but that's all you need to hear if you're the Yankees. If you can't hear the sign. And here's the other thing, too, Michael. When we were growing up, 0-2 at least meant your pitcher was in good shape and that you're not going to see a home run because, you know, there's the two-strike approach and you might give up a base hit. But now guys are hitting home runs and getting big hits, 0-2 pitches, 1-2. So why are we anticipating anything with two strikes? That would annoy me as a pitcher that you're giving the whale sound and now I just gave up a home run on 0-2.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts.
Islanders and the Penguins, 7 o'clock start. That's on our sister station, 10:50 a.m. So 6:30 is the pregame show. And the Devils and the Coyotes, that's at 10 p.m. Mets and the Phillies, a 6:45 start on SNY. And the Yankees and the Blue Jays is 7 o'clock start. 6:30 is the pregame show on Yes. 6 o'clock is the batting practice show.
Oh.
And first pitch is right around 7:05.
Ray Rowe.
As for the Net game, the Nets and the Cavs, that's a 7 p.m. in the play-in game from Brooklyn. And that'll be on TNT. Hmm. And you could get post-game coverage on the Yes app after that game is over. All right, so you got all that? That's game time. Brought to you by Telemardew Irish Whiskey. During the big games this season, enjoy a Telemardew, the original triple blended, triple distilled, and triple cask matured Irish whiskey. Remember, when it's game time, it's Tully time. Please enjoy responsibly.
Should also be noted, Michael, in addition to all those big sports moments, a big episode of This Is Us tonight as well.
I saw you were concerned about that on social media, yeah.
Very. It's the end of Kate and Toby. This is a very, you know, this breakup's been a long time coming, but it's still going to be an emotional night.
Wow. Now, before I move on to the other topic, you know, the siren that they play with two strikes, Fernando Valdez, nice enough to explain what exactly is going on Twitter. He says the Death Star siren is a play on the Evil Empire name given to the Yankees. Remember when the Red Sox called them the Evil Empire?
Sure.
When the siren goes off in the film, it means the ultimate weapon is about to fire and destroy the enemy, hence the two-strike timing.
Hmm. Unless the pitcher decides to waste one, 0-2.
True. Now, Dan Rourke, love Dan, big Yankee fan. He's an editor at John Boy Media.
Okay.
He said, we love the death siren. So I guess there are some fans that love it.
That's stupid.
If you're going to call out Danny, you're going to have to go through me if you're going to call out Danny.
No, I'm not calling him stupid. I'm calling the fact that he loves it like stupid so they have to keep it, even though it irritates their ace, that one of your pitchers who's coming back from Tommy John surgery who wants every inning to be the best it can be is like has to press his palms against his ear so he can hear the pitch call, but you're entertained by it? Some silly little stupid sound effect? Give me a break. Save that for Tampa. Everybody makes fun of Tampa because basically it's like a disco between pitches. Well, come on, can we understand that we've got smart baseball fans who understand the moment? They can stand up and cheer and get excited about two strikes. They don't have to be prompted by a sound effect from 40 years ago. Grow up.
Wouldn't it just take one person saying this negatively affects the way I play?
That's it. Just one.
I think when Garrett Cole talks, people listen.
Well, even if it wasn't, so. Anybody wearing a pitch?
Right.
Because they all contribute to wins, right? So
if someone says, hey, this bugs me, what, you need to worry about the feelings of the person who's controlling the sound effects?
All right. Now, yesterday in the eighth inning, in a game that the Yankees struggled offensively, Aaron Judge struck out. He has yet to hit a home run in four games. What's the big deal? It doesn't matter. He's going to end up with over 40 if he stays healthy. And the crowd booed lightly. Now, it's a big deal, and I understand why it's being written about and why Aaron was asked about it. It wasn't like an overwhelming cascade chorus of boos. But they were heard. They were boos. And when asked about it afterward, Aaron goes, I've been booed since I was 16. It's nothing new. But as far as I know, Aaron Judge has not been booed at Yankee Stadium a lot, if at all. So, that being said, he got booed yesterday. And, you know, Giancarlo Stanton, I guess, could look at him and go, hold my beer, because nobody gets booed like Giancarlo Stanton, and it's one ear and out the other for him. But here's why I bring this up, guys. So they had the contract negotiation with Aaron. And Brian Cashman said to Aaron's representatives, if you turn down this offer, I am going to make it public. So Judge's people knew that. But here's a couple of things. I understand why Brian wanted to make it public. Because if the Yankees didn't sign Judge, then everybody's knee-jerk reaction was that they lowballed him and that they were being cheap. And by publicly giving the number 7 years at 30.5 a year, everybody in baseball said, you know what? That's a really good offer. But Aaron Judge has every right to say, no, I want more. That's why you're not going to hear me rip Aaron Judge on this air. I'm not going to do it. He has the right to say, I want more. Now, whether that's prudent or not, whether that's wise, that's what he believes. And a player becomes great because they have the utmost belief in themselves. And he thinks he deserves more. Okay. But by making it public, and believe me, it would have gotten out. And Brian said at the press conference when he said it, I was going to be inundated with phone calls. Is this accurate? Is that I have to confirm, deny? He said, so I'm just going to say it publicly. But I think there was a method to Brian's madness where he didn't want the Yankees to be looked at or portrayed as being cheap with their star. And they weren't. They weren't. Now, Aaron Judge didn't think it was good enough, and that's fine. But nobody could say they lowballed him. He would have been the second highest paid outfielder in the history of Major League Baseball. Only Mike Trout would make more per annum, okay? But you also, when you did that, there are fans out there that don't believe that players should be paid the money that they're paid anyway. So you're almost setting Aaron up as a villain. Aaron is the star of the team. So if this gets to him, I don't think it will because he's strong-willed and strong-minded, but if this gets to him and he has a lousy year and you turn the fans against him, Don and Peter, who does that benefit? The Yankees are not going to go to the playoffs if Aaron Judge has a bad year. So I get why they did it, but was that the end game? Because what is the end game? Because the numbers would have gotten out anyway, and everybody in the world would have known, you know what, the Yankees made a damn good offer to him. But instead you came out like that, and now all of the onus is on Aaron Judge and all of the fans who love baseball and love sports but think that the players are overpaid anyway. Now they're like booing and going, I thought you loved the Yankees, and you turned it down. So now if he got off to a great start, this would never have been a thing. But he hasn't gotten off to it. It's not terrible, but he hasn't hit a home run yet. And then he gets booed in the eighth inning. To me, guys, I don't think it has a good ending vibe to it.
No. It's vindictive out of Brian. I'm sorry. It is. Because that's the only end game is don't tell me it's going to get out anyway. Since when do they ever give us information because it's about to come out anyway? Because if it does come out, they can deny the report or just ignore it and say no comment. Yeah. Jeff Passan can report it at the end of the day. It's still just a report. Yankees could say, we never said that. We never offered that money. He came out because he felt it was a fair offer and wanted the public to know that it was a fair offer and let them decide for themselves. And if Aaron gets off to a great start, hey, no harm, no foul, right? But if he doesn't, don't blame us. We made a fair offer. If you're going to get on anybody, get on him. He turned it down. Come on, Michael. When do they ever tell us anything because it might come out later?
I wondered about that at the time. I didn't understand why they needed to announce it right away. Like, is the logic, Michael, to avoid the conversation going constantly? Because a part of me thought neither of them have to address it. They can just start the season.
Yeah, like, but I believe that the knee-jerk reaction, if the numbers weren't made public, was that the Yankees lowballed them. And by releasing those numbers, they clearly didn't lowball him, but they clearly didn't give Aaron what he wanted either. And that's why I don't say any side is wrong. The Yankees made an offer they thought was competitive, and it damn well was. But Aaron Judge says, I want more, and he has that right. Yeah.
But Judge never came out and said what he asked for.
No, because if he says what he asked for in the climate that we live in, then people would look at him as greedy. So he's being smart, not saying what he asked for.
But, like, Jeff Passan would have reported this an hour later.
You're right. I think it was to protect the Yankees that they didn't they weren't cheap. And I don't know. I know Brian for 35 years. I don't think he's petty at all. But maybe he wants the fans to know, hey, this guy turned down a lot of money, and he said he wanted to be a New York Yankees for life. It's very complicated. I just don't think the end game is smart.
But it kind of sounds like you're televising arbitration is what it kind of feels like. You know, it's still making you look good at the expense of a player that's still on your team.
That's really important.
You know, that's a really important player. It's one thing if he signed somewhere else and you said, well, hey, we made him a fair offer. Here's what we offered him. He decided to go sign with San Diego. I know, what am I supposed to do? He's still on your team.
You know, Rick and Dave on the morning show from 5 to 8 here on 98.7, you know, they were talking about the fans are booing him because Brian's turned the fan. Well, we've seen the fans boo players. And it doesn't make any sense. That's why I did not want to start this conversation about why would the fans. The fans could do whatever they want. They pay a lot of money to come to the stadium. They can do whatever they want. Now, whether it's wise to the end game of the Yankees winning, that's a discussion for another day and one that I don't want to get into again, because then we'll get the – I could do whatever – and you can. Other than throwing things on the field and being vulgar, you can say whatever you want. But all of it just leads to, isn't the end game supposed to be the Yankees go to the World Series and win? Well, by your star player, who's so vitally important to this getting done, being turned into a villain – it's not a great idea. It's just not. It doesn't serve its purpose.
But and come up with another reason why Brian would do it then. He had to know that this would reflect poorly on Judge. Defending yourself would reflect poorly on Judge. If Passan breaks it, if Buster breaks it, hey, what are you going to do? But to at the press conference announce it, what is your end game? Obviously, side with me, not with Judge. And so if they side with the Yankees, how is it going to manifest itself? They're going to boo him, especially gets off to a slow start. Did Brian have to do that?
I don't know. He explained why he did it. He didn't want to be inundated with phone calls about is this the offer? Is this the offer? So it would have gotten out there.
So you go inundated. Now I'm nervous every time they say inundated.
Well, because you're saying
it could be either way.
No.
So I'm wrong?
That's right.
I've never heard it.
I've never heard it in my life until right now. I know that word really well. I mean, you're a wordsmith, but I've never. Anthony, you ever heard that before?
I haven't heard it that way, no. But I'm
Ty?
Sure it's right.
Ty, you ever heard that?
No, I have not.
Well, we're all ignoramuses, Michael. We know you stand tall above us. So maybe you're right, but when you said it, it took me a second. I had to like translate it in my head to what he meant.
And because I'm so confident that he is so much smarter than I am, I'm thinking, oh my God, that's another word that I've screwed up.
You've been getting it wrong. Michael, is there a chance that it's not a thing?
I could be wrong. I'm not so arrogant to say that
God,
I'm always right.
I'd be so thrilled if there was just one random word you've been saying wrong. Don, wouldn't that be vindication for you? Sweet, sweet vindication.
Vindication is strong because I'm still way behind, but it would be
nice to know though.
You know what I do have though? I have the Mets starting lineup.
See, this is we got to talk about this.
All right, today's starting lineup brought to you by Nissan. Brandon Nimmo in center field, Starling Marte in right, Francisco Lindor at short, Pete Alonso cleans up, plays first, Eduardo Escobar at third, batting fifth, batting sixth, the DH, Robinson Cano, Mark Canha off to a great start in left field, batting. Seventh, batting eighth, the second baseman, Jeff McNeil, and James McCann will catch, and he's going to bat ninth with Tylor McGill, the starter, making his second start of the young season.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
Trevor May, who gave the thumbs up, there's inflammation, but not enough to put him on the IL, but he shut down for a couple of days. Again, what did the thumbs up mean, Don?
Well, that makes sense, or he didn't go on the IL. I would think that if you're celebrating, you didn't go on the IL. So I'm a little confused. I got to look at the actual.
Trevor May spoke. Here's what he said. All right.
Very, very low-grade tricep strain, which makes a lot of sense with stiffening up in the second inning. Usually when something's barking a little bit, other things take over to try to help, and so that's when you start to feel. I think that's kind of what the buzzword was just a little bit of back of shoulder, a little bit of light forearm. Anything attached to that place is going to start to protect it, so that's the thing we want to avoid, but it's the best-case scenario for sure.
I love the music that Trevor brings with him. That's nice.
Yeah.
All right, so you ready for some Sunday Night Baseball ratings news?
Yes. Yay!
Here we go. So the game had 2,478,000 viewers across ESPN and ESPN2. That's up 68% from 2021 Sunday Night Baseball season average.
Holy crap.
The K-Rod cast on, and Peter, becomes the most viewed MLB regular season alternate telecast of all time. Now, they've had an alternate telecast for the last 4 years, like the StatCast one, the Baseball Nerd one. So this is the highest rating ever. And this is the one that I was really proud of, Don. You ready? We got 10% of the Sunday Night Baseball audience, which is almost exactly the percentage of what the Manning cast got on Monday Night Football.
That's good.
Right. So that's all you can ask for, because that's about as big a success as you could possibly have. Oh, yeah.
What you're saying is that there is a percentage of the audience that will enjoy this. Obviously, the audience is much higher for NFL than MLB, but if you get the same percentage, it tells you that there's an appetite for this.
And we want to whet people's appetite.
That's right, and you did on Sunday. Now, here's what Walker said in his tweet. Everything is all good. And I guess clapping hands.
But then you're on the IL. How's everything all good?
So did he go in there thinking he was going to need, you know, a season-ending surgery?
Right. That's the only thing I could figure. He thought, rotator cuff something.
And I get that. I mean, I guess you always fear the worst, and then when it's not, you're happy. But still, it doesn't give you a lot of information. When I saw that from Walker, I'm thinking, okay, all's good. He should be able to make his next start, maybe miss one start. You go on the IL. And again, for a pitcher, not a big deal, because it's 10 days, so he might miss a couple of starts. Not the end of the world. But, you know, it's in the eye of the beholder instead of just giving us information like we ended up eventually getting from the Mets.
Now, Brian Hoke, who covers the Yankees for MLB.com, says that Gerrit Cole says he plans to use PitchCom again tomorrow in a start against the Blue Jays, though he had trouble hearing signs because of Yankee Stadium's two-strike siren. And Cole said, it's an interesting sound. Now, no matter who's behind the siren, who pushed for it, who likes it, if your players are having a hard time getting the signs, you got to stop using it, right?
You got to. And again, that's not anybody's fault. It's just that this is new technology, and what they came up with last year now didn't interfere with it last year. Now it interferes, so you make the adjustment.
I don't know what anyone was thinking, but whatever.
It's just not New York.
No. I don't know. That's weird. Also, it sounds like it's like, are you giving the batter a warning? It's like it doesn't even feel like you're rooting for the team the right way.
You got to see, like, you know, traveling around with the Rangers, right? They've got to do certain markets, especially non-traditional hockey markets, where you might have a lot of people going to a game for the first time. You almost have to let people, all right, this is a big moment in the game, everybody. So let's show it on the Jumbotron. Let's everybody know it's a power play. Oh. You don't have to necessarily do that in New York. We've been following sports here for 100 years. We know all the rules. We're good.
All right, so let's make a little wager, okay? We don't have to use the app. This will be a personal wager. Tonight, Nestor Cortez gets two strikes. Do they play the sound or not?
Oh, it's gone.
I think they play it.
I think it's erased now.
No, I think they play it.
Well, that's a bad job. Why is Nestor Cortez any less or more important than Cole at that particular moment. He's on the mound tonight. You want to get a win. You don't want to dip under 500.
I think they'll play it tonight, and they'll play it tomorrow with Garrett Cole on the mound. Maybe they'll play it lower.
No, that's arrogance and ignorance at the same time. Well, why is it so important? Like, who outside of the John Boy guys, like, who's not going to go to a game now? Like, are we going to get phone calls now like we did with the stupid auxiliary scoreboard? That, I can't believe they're not playing the Star Wars sound with two – stop it. We're trying to win games here, people. Grow up. That's what I would tell them. And the Yankees – I'll say it. On yes, and right in front of the Yankee announcer. If they do it again, stupid. They're stupid people.
Oh, my God.
No, I'm serious, Peter. I'm not wrong, am I?
If the pitching staff's complaining and you don't change it, it would make no sense. It would actually go against the Yankee way completely, since when are they more about the entertainment in the park than the actual product?
Is it that entertaining?
No, it's not.
It's not the dun, 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 dun. You score a run. Okay, we're good. We get it. Even that's kind of dumb because you're already celebrating a run scored. We don't need to be prompted, but it's been around forever, and it's not during play where it's going to be affecting anybody. Now you got a pitcher that's got 7 years left on his contract, and now he can't hear the signs, but we got to keep it because Yo-Yo Bumchuck in the upper deck really likes it.
Jabroni,
the guy that
Pumple
probably
Duck
goes to the Star Wars movies in, like, full stormtrooper uniform. Oh, we can't lose him. He may not come to games anymore, Peter.
I bet you our buddy Ryan Rucco likes it. He loves him some Star Wars.
But he's not he is not dumb enough. Thumb sucker enough. To want it so bad that it's going to irritate the pitcher that's trying to get the opposition out.
Right, I agree.
Honestly, Michael, if you hear it tonight, they're stupid, like dumb.
Honestly, Jar Jar Binks himself would not want it. Okay.
Wow, this is getting aggressive. Wow.
George Lucas wouldn't want it.
You know that Star Wars is owned by Disney, Don.
He's not dissing Star Wars.
I'm not. No, it's fine. It's not. It's nothing against Star Wars. It's against the people that would rather hear that than Cole strike the guy out. Now, listen, they got crossed up. The winning run scored on a wild pitch, but I got to hear the sound. Yay! That's why I go. I don't like baseball. I just love Star Wars so much. I just want to hear the sounds. I love the movie so much. I got to hear the sounds.
But I got to tell you.
Like I'm looking for a vein in my arm.
I didn't know what it was. I mean, David Kona said on the air, it sounds like a pregnant whale. I've never seen 1 second of a Star Wars movie. I have no idea what the sound
I'm
is.
I'm just saying, I don't know who it is. It might be somebody that can cost me, you know, being on yes. The person that makes the decision to tick Cole and the pitching staff off to play it is a moron.
Wow.
And I'm not wrong.
I don't think he is wrong. A little aggressive.
That's not aggressive. You know what's aggressive? You gave a pitcher a 9-year contract. You basically married him. You walked him down the aisle, put a ring on. Most marriages don't last 9 years. This one will. And you're going to tick him off for a stupid whale sound from Star Wars, because that means that the Death Star is sending the big mother load of a thing and you know what? And he gives up a home run. Because Peter, it's not guaranteed that it's going to be the third strike, is it?
Peter, he just said mother load of a thing. That's what he just said.
He said a lot over the last day.
Because I don't even know what it means. I saw Star Wars in 1977
This is from the more recent Star Wars.
Then I couldn't tell you. I didn't see it. But I'm not mocking.
Oh, it's the original, Anthony said.
It is. See, we don't even know. Like, I love Caddyshack. You get a free bowl of soup with that hat. If they decided to have Rodney Dangerfield say, you get a free bowl of soup with that hat with two strikes at like a Met game, because Scherzer's got two strikes, and just as he's sitting there on the mound getting his signals, you get a free bowl of soup with that hat? Love it. One of my favorite movies. But if Max don't want it, it's gone. It is gone. Before you can even punctuate the sentence, done, out. You know why? Because I'd rather strike the batter out than hear the stupid thing from the movie.
He's making sense.
I'm sorry. I'm making too much sense. This is not, it's not even aggressive. It's common sense. It's not, he's making sense. It's common sense, Peter.
Do you know what's going to happen, Peter? I'm going to tell you. Let me just talk to you for a moment. Tomorrow, there's going to be a blue dot on Don's face on yes.
You know what? And I'll wear it proud. I'll wear it proud. If you told me that was what was going to happen, wouldn't change my opinion.
And it wouldn't happen at yes. There'd be a blue dot on him on the radio.
The big mother load of a thing.
When Don
talks. I would think it could happen on yes because somebody from the Yankees decided to have that played.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
I just want to hear the sounds. And I have to question the intelligence of that person. If he said, no, it doesn't, this is more important. Because that's what they're saying. That this sound effect is more important than what makes my multi-million dollar starting pitcher happy. Is that good business, Peter? Let me ask you, is that good business?
I don't like it.
You're such an instigator, Peter.
I'm just being honest.
We're going to break.
You don't back me on this, Michael?
I think that if Gerrit Cole doesn't want it, it shouldn't be played. I agree. But, I mean, you're injecting in veins and things. I mean, you're really, you've gone off.
Well, you know what?
You worry me sometimes.
I'm just trying to get a point across, and if I can do it in an entertaining way, all the better.
But here's what's happening. So let's really lift the curtain and the skirt. You ready?
Lift it up and show it to me.
You're starting a forest fire right now.
Yeah.
And I'm the clown holding the hose who has to try to put it out.
I get it. You know what? There's no water coming out of the hose because you can't put this fire out. If I just got a text message from Filippelli that said, Don, if you repeat this again, you're off the network, I'd repeat it 10 more times because it's that right. Sometimes right is right.
So the mortgage is all paid up at the big house, right?
Oh, listen, you know what? Listen, all fair. We love all the people at Yes. They do a terrific job. I'm so proud to be on television. I made my debut on HBO Sunday. Didn't say a word, but I was on HBO because of Yes, okay? I love John Filippelli. I love everybody. Yes, they treat me like gold.
He offered you money when you had COVID. He offered you money.
They
cash
in your pocket.
He offered me money. He's a great guy. They're not affecting the mortgage payment.
All right, let's take a brief timeout.
And even if they did, right's right, Peter. Right's right.
No, right's right. Wrong's wrong. And that sound, that blowhorn, whatever that is, that's bad.
That's a shofar.
Tikkia! You got to play it when I say that, Anthony. That's the Jewish joke. I'm going to say it again, and then you play it. Tikkia! That was for all the Jews. Enjoy that. Well, that was more Tikkia Gedolah, but keep going.
Can I take a break? We're right
go
up
ahead. Let's
we
go to
pay
break.
Bills right here on Yes at 98.7 ESPN.
They're stupid. Like dumb.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts.
Duncan in Jersey City. Duncan.
Doing that, Mike.
How you doing?
Michael, listen, I got two points I'd like to make about your alternate cast with A-Rod on Sunday night. But first, I want to say that last segment by Donald Pucks LaGreca is why he's the best, guys. I'm sorry.
He is the best.
Thank you, Duncan.
So, anyway, Mike, I think what you did there, what the kids would call a humble brag, you started talking about your ratings. And I think you said you had the highest alternate viewing of an MLB game in history.
Yes.
But Mike.
It wasn't a humble brag. It was a brag.
No, humble.
But Mike, what are you comparing it to? I don't think there really were any other alternate viewings.
I just said that they had alternate cast for the last 4 years on Sunday Night Baseball.
Yeah, but Mike.
Well, no, but what? They had alternate...
No one knew about them, and if a tree falls in a forest, then no one
knew about them. But if he had lost to them, believe me, people would know.
And so what? So Michael gets less credit because people knew about the one they did. That's a tribute to him and A-Rod and the cast they put together.
It is. So, well, I'm just joking. I tuned in and I definitely listened, or I should say watched for a portion. But I do want to talk about just alternate cast in general. And it's the same comment on the Peyton Manning one with Eli. Okay. I love it. I mean, as a huge sports fan, I don't mind getting an alternate take. And I tuned in because I'd like to hear A-Rod's point. I know he gets a lot of heat for his commentary, but I actually like it, as well as hearing your point of view. I don't like the interviews. They are too gimmicky. They slow it down, and they put the game in the background.
I'm glad you brought that up. Wait, Duncan, wait a minute. If you want the game, right, you go to Channel 36. That's what Carl and Eduardo and David do. This is an alternate broadcast. It's something different. There are going to be interviews. It's not going to be play-by-play of the game. To expect that, then you really don't understand the meaning of alternate. You've already got the main broadcast that is covering the game the way the games have been covered since TV existed. This is something different. To expect it to be the same thing, then how would it be alternate? Does that make any sense? Then we'd be in the ballpark and not in some living room they built for us on the southern tip of Manhattan.
And here's the thing. Listen, I love you, Michael, but you get some of these games are 3.5-4 hours. You're just going to have two people talking about a game. I think you need the guests. And listen, when I 30 seconds into watching you Sunday was 30 seconds more than I watched the Manning cast. You know I did not watch it because I'm not a big alternate broadcast guy. I never was, but I watched because of you, and I was entertained by it. But what made all the news with Manning was usually Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, Russell Wilson, the commissioner. Like, they break news. I mean, Roger Clemens had some great insight about not going to the Hall of Fame. We found out that he's a DJ. Like, that's the stuff you want. And I'm not a guest guy. But in those situations, that's what makes it.
I just don't understand the thought process of, you know, the guests are obscuring the game. The game's on 36. The game that we're doing, it's framing what we're doing, but we're not giving, here's a 2-1. If anything, I probably did it too much on Sunday.
Right.
Don, I just love that Michael always refers to Channel 36 like it's 1989 and we all have the same cable system.
You know, it's weird because when I was growing up in Hawthorne, That was ESPN. It was 36.
Right. So I think when I have Optimum, I think that Optimum is the most distributed cable system in this area. So
and they
most
kept
people
it 36.
ESPN at 36. Yeah. What is it in Manhattan, Peter?
I have no idea. You know, I have DirecTV Stream. I don't know what the hell it is.
What do you have it, Don?
I have DirecTV and it's 206. Okay. And then ESPN's 209.
I mean, some of the tweets that got me on Sunday, why are you guys not doing play-by-play? Because that's not what this is. And it even says on the bottom line, I don't know if you noticed it, Don, traditional broadcast on ESPN.
Right.
And people still don't get it.
Well, they're new. Now they should get it. And you're doing it this week, right? So
yes,
hopefully.
But the funny part is, guys, listen, the most viewed ESPN. Okay. And the guy's right. The other ones were like, you know, Nerdcast, they called it. And they did a great job. But they didn't have the cachet of Alex Rodriguez on there. But the thing that I really am proud of, we got the same percentage of the audience as what the Mannings got. And that's all you could ask for.
Yeah,
because the Mannings were the gold standards. Because let's say there's 20 million people that watch Monday Night Football. So Manning's got 2 million viewers. So there were 2.3 million people that watched Sunday Night Baseball, and we got 230,000. We got the same percentage of people.
See, that's a big – because Manning's consistently around 10% of the viewers went to the alternate cast. And you were consistent with that.
Right.
So that's a reflection of football's more popular than baseball from a television rating standpoint, so – but you were consistent with the number.
That's very solid, though.
That's really outstanding, honestly, because I really didn't know what to expect.
I didn't either.
Now, that's a great first game, Yankees-Red Sox. You know, Braves-Padres, also a very good game, but doesn't have the national cachet. But as long as you continue with the 10%, I think you're golden.
Yeah, we're looking for 20. We're trying to build it up.
Hey, you should always try to do better. But I will. But you know, you're going to do the same thing and just hope more people watch it. But
well, you know, what we hope to do is even tighten it up more and get even better guests. And I thought we had great guests. We're looking to make it the place to be. You know, just you know the bar where you want to hang out and not really lock in and watch every single pitch. You're just looking up, drinking a beer, and enjoying the conversation.
Baseball, Peter, to me is perfect for this because this was, and you know how much I love baseball.
Yeah, it lends itself to this more than football.
Baseball, more than any other sport, is that you can sit there, and this is not a knock, but it's just a fact that you can do other things. Like you could do your taxes, you could balance your checkbook, because there's a lot of downtime between pitches and all that. Where when you're caught in the other three sports, there's not as much downtime, and you don't have a chance to do other things. So this is kind of allowing for some experimentation and having some fun and not really come at the expense of enjoying the game.
Got the Mets and the Phillies at 6:45. They try to snap a little small two-game losing streak where they've blown leads late in the game in the last two games. Yankees and the Blue Jays. Yankees try to get their offense on track. That's a 7 o'clock start. Coverage starts at 6 on YES. You've got the Islanders and the Penguins. That doesn't mean that much. Devils and the Coyotes. And then the Nets and the Cavs for the play-in game on TNT, 7 p.m. post-game on the YES app. But we're going to concentrate on the baseball time for Diamond Notes, brought to you by 2x London, the engagement shop at London Jewelers. Injuries yesterday, Taiwan Walker is going on the IL. And then Buck Showalter said that after the IL stint is over, he's going to have to make a start before he comes back. Some inflammation in there. So that's not great news, but it certainly could have been worse. And then Trevor May has a triceps inflammation, but not enough to go on the IL, but he's not going to be available for about 3 or 4 days, and they'll see after that. Edwin Diaz has been activated off the bereavement list. That's going to help them as well. The bullpen has imploded the last couple of days, and it's going to happen. The way baseball is now, especially this month in 2022, you are going to see this. The starters are not stretched out. The bullpens are going to win or lose games. That's all there is to it. So the Mets for 2 days in a row without their closer, remember that, without Edwin Diaz available because he was in Puerto Rico because of the passing of his grandfather, they lost two games late. It's going to happen. And I think you're going to see it happen throughout baseball, Don. The Yankees had to use 7 relief pitchers on opening day, 6 relief pitchers the next day. That's just the game. The way it is right now, starters are not stretched out.
And you're right about Diaz because last night after Lugo had given up the tying run, you probably at that moment with two outs would bring in Diaz. Or maybe you bring in Diaz at 4-3 because, again, to get the four-out save. Because you don't want to blow a 4-0 lead in the eighth inning, and I think that was not available to them. So I'm worried about the bullpen a little bit. That's two straight days in which they blew leads in the eighth inning. Otherwise, we're talking about an undefeated team. But also, I'd like to see a little bit more offense. Is that wrong? I mean, they got 5 runs on Saturday. 4 of them came off the grand slam from Alonso. They just had 2 runs on Sunday. They had 4 runs yesterday in a wiffle ball stadium in which they scored 3 of the 4 runs in the first inning. So we could talk about the bullpen blowing it, and they did. You had a 4-0 lead going into the eighth inning. That should be enough in any ballpark to win, Michael. But it would have been nice to be able to score a few more runs after you're able to get 3 right off the bat. So am I wrong to maybe expect a little bit more offense out of this team?
No, I hear what you're saying, Don, but a 4-run lead in the eighth inning should be enough.
No, I get it, but you know we're not having this conversation if it's 8-0.
Right.
And again, at 3-0 in the first inning, you're thinking, wow, and they only scored 1 more run the rest of the way. And like I said, it goes back to just 2 runs on Sunday. Was it Saturday? They got, 5 runs? 4 came off the Alonso Grand Slam. So, listen, I liked early in the series against Washington. They were situationally hitting. They were getting tack on runs. Those were the first couple of games. But, you know, since then, it's been a little bit of a struggle to hit consistently. And I think that while you haven't stretched out your pitchers yet, you've got some bullpen issues. What's the tonic for that? The tonic for that is to score runs and make it a moot point. And at least in the last couple of games, they didn't do that. But you're right. 4-0, eighth inning. You're not thinking about losing that game.
Now, on the Yankee side, they got 4 hits. 2 of them were in the ninth inning, by the way. So they were shut down completely by the Blue Jays. Blue Jays won 3-0. And the Blue Jays are good. That's the first game of a four-game set. And the Blue Jays have dominated Yankee Stadium since the beginning of last year. They're now 9-2 here at the stadium. So the Yankees have to right that ship. Their offense didn't click the last two games. That's why they lost. They're 3-for-15 with runners in scoring position. 19 runners left on base. And, you know, the Yankees are a team that when they hit home runs, are going to win. And when they don't hit home runs, it's going to be difficult for them to string together hits. That's just the way they're built. So it's not a glitch. That's they're built to hit home runs. And so are the Blue Jays, by the way. How about this stat? The Blue Jays last year scored 49.3% of their runs on home runs. Only the Giants were more at 49.5, and the Yankees scored at 47.5. So these are teams that are built to win via the home run. George Springer had a home run yesterday. That's all they needed. Yankees couldn't get one out of the park.
And that's not changing, Michael. You mentioned the Giants, and they really relied on the home run last year to win 107 games. In that ballpark, think of it. I know they brought the fences in a little bit, but, Michael, that is not a hitter-friendly ballpark. And so far, that stadium this year is playing small. But is it playing small, or are these players really so focused on the home run that really there is no big ballparks anymore? Dodgers hit a lot of home runs. That's always been a pitcher-friendly ballpark. San Francisco had so many home runs last year. You know, so these ballparks where you're like, oh, that plays to the pitcher, does that even exist anymore? I don't think there's a ballpark that can contain these hitters.
No, these hitters are big and the ballparks are smaller, so that's what happens. And the Yankees didn't hit home runs yesterday, so they end up losing. Now, one guy who had a good game is Joey Gallo, and we had people complaining about him yesterday. He actually hit very well, and he had a walk as well. But because the rest roulette showed up on Joey Gallo today, he's not in the lineup against the left-hander Kikuchi. And I mentioned this yesterday, and I'm going to ask Aaron Boone about it. I promise on Thursday, he comes on every 4 o'clock, every Thursday at 4 o'clock. They've got 9 starters for 8 spots. Every day, somebody's going to be ticked off. Every day. It's almost like the only way that you could get out from under it is if one of the 9 gets hurt. You don't want anybody to get hurt. But at the beginning of the season where everybody's healthy, there's a guy's got to rest once every, like, 7 days.
But yep. It's a rotation of anger.
Yeah. And again, confidently says to us, Boone, that DJ's going to get 500 at-bats. So that means, like, every day he's bouncing around. Listen, Luis Guillorme being your utility guy, that's one thing. You play some third, play some second. He's going to get into, you know, some games during the course of the year. Basically, DJ LeMahieu's your utility guy. A guy that, what is this, his fifth year with the Yankees, fourth year with the Yankees? At least in 2 of those years, he was your MVP.
So my MVP question, of the league.
Why do they have 9 starters for 8 positions? Why?
I think you need guys like Marwin Gonzalez on your bench that know what their job is. But now,
no, but you've got DJ.
Guys,
but you've got everybody. You've got a starter on your bench every day.
I know, and I don't think that's good.
I would like to know from Aaron why. Like, why do you need a starter as your utility? Like every day, there's going to be a significant guy in your that's not in your lineup. Why? And you're also forcing yourself to make tough decisions. Like, Gallo had a couple of hits yesterday. I got to sit him.
The answer,
right in the hot hand?
I can tell you the answer is going to be because for us, that we believe have the best people there humanly possible. We're not going to deny talent just because there's not a position for them. We want to have our bench players be starters. But I hear what you're saying, Don, that that sounds great in theory, but if you're just upsetting a rotation of people, is that really worthwhile?
And maybe the answer you can answer, Peter. Maybe the answer is we don't think Donaldson's going to be able to play 140 games this year. We think that calf is going to bark on him. He's going to go on the disabled list, and DJ's going to be my third baseman for a month. Or maybe Torres is going to get traded for a pitcher. These are things I guess he can't say, but am I wrong to think that's the assumption, Michael, that this is only temporary because they think somebody's going to get hurt or somebody's going to get traded?
Well, I think the only thing that's sustainable, and I'm not rooting for it, nor anyone should be rooting for it, somebody gets hurt. That's it. That's the only thing I could figure out. So today, Gallo's out. Hicks moves to left field. Judge is in center field. Because if, let's say that all 9 guys, God willing, they're all healthy, every single day of the season, somebody's going to be ticked off. Somebody thinks they're going to be, they should be in there. I mean, imagine you have to rest in the fifth game of the year. That's what it comes down to. Yesterday it was Josh Donaldson, and it almost played out perfectly for Aaron Boone because Donaldson pinch hit late and almost got a hit, but it was a brilliant double play turn by the Blue Jays. But that's what you're turning a regular player into, is a pinch hitter, because Josh Donaldson's been an MVP in the league. He is 4-for-24 coming into yesterday. Now 4-for-25, lifetime as a pinch hitter. So in his long career, he's had 25 trips to the plate where he doesn't start. You're asking people to do things that they're not used to doing.
Yeah.
You know. Now, the story today that's somewhat humorous, but also it's going to be interesting to see how the Yankees react. They play the Star Wars siren with two strikes. And we've seen Luis Severino not be able to hear the pitch.com voice in the hat because the thing was so loud. And then today, Gerrit Cole kind of threw shade at it because, yeah, it's an interesting sound. I couldn't hear it a couple of times. Now, Don and I and Peter went back and forth whether or not they're going to play it tonight. I think they will. Not that they don't think of Nestor Cortez. He's important to this team. But I don't think they're going to yank it that quickly. I don't. Maybe they'll play it lower.
Listen, I had some fun in the last segment, but I'm staying firm. They've got to get rid of it.
Like, they're stupid people.
But I don't understand the logic that it is so important to the atmosphere at Yankee Stadium that I'm going to jeopardize my pitcher being able to hear what pitch to throw against the Toronto Blue Jays. You know how this fan base is. There's no such thing as any kind of mail-in games. There's no such thing as it's too early. Every game is important to these fans, but we got to give them the sound effect. Like, I really, honestly, Michael, I don't understand the logic why they would have to keep it. You could say Cole's making excuses. All right, obviously Cole's not very popular right now after what happened in the wild card game last year, but you can understand his complaint. If he can't hear the signal, how is that good? And what's the positive of playing the sound effect?
I don't know. I'll find out today. And I think a lot's going to be – because Gerrit Cole is a very important person for this team, and he's got a lot of power in this organization. You know, he's going to be here another 7 years. So if he says it's distracting, you got to listen to him. And Luis Severino's important. He couldn't hear. Imagine you lose a game because you can't hear the voice in the hat.
And it's one thing if you can't hear because the fans are so loud. That's something that you can't really do. You're making a conscious decision to play a sound effect. What is the positive of that sound effect? Like, if you stop playing it, fans are going to walk out and protest? Michael, 90% probably even notice that it's gone. Like, are they that sensitive? Like, so a lot of companies, right, Peter? A guy had an idea. Let him have his moment. We don't want to take it away and squelch the creativity. All right, I kind of get that, but not at the expense of the players on the field. Let's not forget the reason that we're here, people, is to be entertained by the baseball team succeeding, your favorite team succeeding.
It's so weird, too. It's like it feels like the Celtics. It would be like the Celtics. Eventually, when Red Auerbach died, the Celtics added dancers, right? Because that was something he never wanted, and they did it eventually. It would be like the Celtics being focused on that. Like, even though we know Jason Tatum likes his extra 5 minutes before the end of halftime, we think it's really important that we have these dancers do what they're going to do. Like, it's so counter, and the reason I compare it to the Celtics is franchises that I take seriously as the product on the court or field is what matters. It's such an odd thing for the Yankees.
Well, those are diamond notes brought to you by Two by London, the engagement shop by London Jewelers. Pick or design the perfect engagement ring to fit every budget at any of their 6 area locations. Let's go to the phones. Let's go all the way to Missouri. Chris in Missouri, you're next on the show.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good.
What's
how
up,
are
Chris?
You?
Okay, I'm gonna explain this whole Star Wars thing because I don't even have to tell you the plot or nothing. But it's basically a fire alarm. It's a fire alarm. So it's contradictory towards our own team. And now it's really hurting our pitchers because they can't hear. When they sound the alarm on the battle station, that means we're being infiltrated. We're in trouble. So it's totally stupid and contradictory to even what they're trying to prove. It's kind of like the Devil fans when they're on the penalty kill and they're going, kill it, kill it. It's the dumbest thing in the world.
That at least makes sense. The fans are chanting kill to kill the penalty. I'm all for fans doing something. Like, it would be really stupid if Garrett Cole said, I wish the fans wouldn't stand up and cheer when there were two strikes. That would be ridiculous. But it's an artificial sound that nobody's asked for or really, I think, even cares about.
You know, Seinfeld 4 actually tweets something interesting. He said it compares to the home team quarterback telling the fans to quiet down so the offense could hear the signals. These aren't the fans. I mean, you take the fans screaming for two strikes, but an artificial sound, I mean, you're making it more difficult for your this is the first year of this pitch comm. And there's a voice in the hat for people who don't know. They put a receiver in the hat. Higashioka hits a button that's on his knee pad or a shin guard. And that button tells the pitcher, fastball, outside. They got to be able to hear it.
And also, it's so un-Yankee, right? I mean, this is the team with no names on the back. They're so traditional, no beards. But we have to have the Star Wars sound effect when there's two strikes. Have to have it.
Let's go to Raza in Toronto. Raza.
Hey, guys. First time, long time. I wanted to talk about PitchCom and how I thought that, you know, Aaron Judge at the at-bat yesterday against the Blue Jays reliever, I think Simber, he really controls the at-bat and, you know, he controls the tempo and the pace. But with PitchCom, it seems like it was messing up his flow. And I think that's an advantage for the pitchers now because they get the sign right away. So when he enters the box, you know, he's kind of ready to throw.
Oh, but the batter could step out, Raza. I mean, that's not an issue. They still don't have a pitch clock where the batter can't step out. You can step out. You can ask for time. And Aaron Judge is one of those guys. He's not Chuck Knobloch or Mike Hargrove. He doesn't step out of the box every single there were times I've seen Aaron Judge stay in the box because the pitcher was pitching quickly and he loved it. So I don't think that's an issue at all.
The only thing I can think of, Michael, is that they really do a lot of prep, right? They watch pitchers. And if you went to work on a guy and knew his rhythms, and those rhythms now change because he's getting the count different, could that take you out of your rhythm? If you just know how he pitches, now he's pitching differently? I don't know. It might be a stretch, but they do so much work, right? They watch so much video, and they prepare so well that if something is different, I guess it can mess you up a little bit.
Let's go to Stan in Pennsylvania. Stan?
Hey, guys, first-time caller.
Welcome aboard.
Thank you. Listen, Mike, I want to piggyback on something you said earlier about Aaron Judge and how the whole contract situation seemed to leak out. Let me paint a scenario for you. If I'm Aaron Judge, I'm a homegrown kid.
Sure.
I play a Gold Glove right field. I'm squeaky clean. I am the face of baseball in this city. I know Met fans may not like to hear that, but it is true. He is the face of baseball in this city. You bring in a guy, okay, from Houston. I know you need a top-of-the-rotation guy, but you give him pretty much what he wanted, okay, and I'm supposed to be lowballed? Listen, if I'm Aaron Judge, I'm not taking nothing less than $324. You may pay me $325 if I'm signing back with the Yankees.
How many years?
You know what? That's where the negotiations come in, how many years, but I feel I think if you put a gun to his head, he's not as good as Mike Trout, but I feel he should be the highest paid Yankee.
But Stan, one thing that I would disagree with you. They didn't lowball him. They'd make him the second highest paid outfielder in Major League Baseball history, far ahead of Mookie Betts' real value of his contract, which is $25 million, because his money is deferred. None of the Yankee money is deferred, so it's really 30.5. You could say that maybe it's not high, but you can't. It's unfair to say it's a low ball offer. It's a really market appropriate offer. It is. Everybody in baseball, if you read all the baseball comments around the country, people in baseball said the Yankees really stepped up and gave him a great offer. That doesn't mean that Aaron has to take it, but I do have to disagree with you. It's not a low-ball offer.
And you can't completely ignore the injuries that he's had and also how old he is.
The key, Don. He is victimized because he went to college. And if he wants the same value as what Mookie Betts and Trout got, which is in the $300 million, he's not getting it.
No.
Are not giving him a 10-year contract.
When this contract kicks in, because remember, he still has this year left. So if they give him the 8 years, the 8 years will start in 2023. He'll be 31 years old. So I look, forget about the injuries that he's had before. It's hard to forget, but let's just, for sake of argument, forget about them. Does he look like the body type that is going to be able to perform at this level at 37, 38 years old?
Well, Alex said something to me the other day. He said, power doesn't age. He said, speed does.
Mm.
But the interesting thing about Aaron Judge's case, no one's ever been this size in baseball history, ever. So there's no, I mean, right. Because we're in an age in sports now, everything is run through the computer, an actuarial table. They don't have one on a 6'7", 282-pound man. He's never played this sport before, so they don't know how he's going to age.
And Alex is right. He maybe still hit home runs at that advanced age. We saw Dave Winfield do it. We saw Reggie Jackson do it. But what do the callers say? He's got a gold glove. Well, he's not going to be a gold glover in his late 30s. He's not going to probably even be playing the outfield in his late 30s. You know, part of what makes him great is his arm and his glove. So if all he's going to do is basically be, you know, Dave Kingman or Rob Deere, is that something that even in an analytic world where all they care about is home runs, is that going to be worth north of $30 million a year when this guy is north of 35 years old?
And I'm going to repeat, because I want everybody to know exactly what I'm saying. I don't think either side is wrong. I think the Yankees made him a fair offer. And Aaron Judge has every right to bet on himself. He shouldn't be denigrated for it. He shouldn't be embarrassed. He bet on himself. I think I'm worth more. I think I'm going to have a great season. And I'm going to tell everybody something. And the Yankees know this too. If he goes out and finishes in the top five in the MVP, and he plays 140 games, he's going to get more. There'll be a team that will give him more and more years.
Well, that's where I don't know. I don't think there's any situation in which he gets nine. It may be more money. It may be more money. But, Michael, here's my question. If you're Cashman and he plays 140 games and he has the best season of his career, would you give him the 9 years?
No, but it's not, first, nobody knows what Aaron has asked for. Anything that's just people are guessing.
Okay.
And the Yankee offer was for 7 years, not including this year, which is his arbitration year. So essentially it would be an 8-year deal. So if he plays and becomes a free agent and all 30 teams can negotiate with him, the Yankee offer is going to be 7 years, not going to be 8. Now, maybe if that's what it took to get him, that there was an outlier team that wanted to give him 8 or 9, maybe the Yankees would go to 8. But they weigh all these things very carefully. If they offered him 7 years at 30.5 a year, that's probably where they feel comfortable going, because he'll be 31 next April 26th. So his contract essentially it'll be the 31, 32, 33, 34, 35, 36, up to the 37 year. Will they go to 8? I don't know. But they're not wrong.
Would you
and
go
he's
to
not
eight?
Wrong.
But would you go to 8?
All right, if he has a great year and they go to the playoffs and he does great, and there's a team out there that wants to give him that 8th year, I would extend for him because he's the face of the franchise. But if he's looking for 9 and 10, I don't think he could do it. But maybe they do. Maybe the thought of losing him to the Giants or particularly the Mets, maybe it drives them differently. I don't know what they're talking about in their offices.
It's such an awkwardly difficult position because you love him so much. He's so beloved. But at the same time, you go a step too far, and it you're a yo-yo. You're just a yo-yo. It's not what good franchises do. They don't. I'm sorry. All due respect to the current Mets, but you don't put yourself in Bobby Bonilla situations. That's what yo-yo teams do.
Or what Seattle do with Cano.
Right, exactly. And we see where Cano is now. So like they just can't do it. That's why I feel for Cashman, because I would imagine he thought this was a very competitive deal. And if you look at the other everyday players in baseball who are close to his level or better, it's a pretty competitive deal. They didn't offer him nothing.
People around baseball think it's an extraordinarily competitive deal. Some people think the Yankees gave him actually more than they should have, but he's valuable. He's more valuable to the Yankees. So I don't think that's right either, but it's a tough call. A lot of people on Twitter say he should be the highest paid player on the team. Really? Because Gerrit Cole makes $36 million? Is anybody going to be higher paid than Max Scherzer with the Mets at 43.5?
Well, listen, I don't disagree with that as a concept, but to your point, that's just not the way it is in baseball right
also,
now.
Also, I mean, the Dodgers, right? So their highest paid player is Mookie Betts. But really, the highest paid player is Trevor Bauer at $40 million. So pitchers are looked at as commodities different than other players. So you can't say he should be the now he should be the highest paid position player on the Yankees, and he is going to be if he accepts that deal. But to say he has to make more than Cole, look around baseball. Pitchers make a lot of money.
I do think that's something that's got to be corrected, though.
It is stupid, Don. It doesn't make sense.
These guys break down. They pitch every fifth day.
They're not quarterbacks. It's actually the opposite. It's funny because your brain would go quarterback, pitcher, the guy who throws, leads the team, etc. But the difference is you need the quarterback on every single offensive play. A starting pitcher you're getting every 5 days. I don't see why you're Garrett Cole. I mean, listen, he's fantastic. But I understand the argument as to why Judge should get more money.
Well, I guess in closing, though, I just think that there are fewer great pitchers than there are great position players.
Apparently, that's what it's believed. The premium's higher.
Right.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoon starting at 3 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.